Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, March 1st, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded, and as usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wma.com. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. You can press *6 to mute and or unmute yourself, to raise your virtual hands or lower your virtual hands, you can press *9 and that will help you raise or lower your hands. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the mute or which is the speaker icon to speak. And if you would like to make any comments, feel free to raise your virtual hands. If you go to the participants list, you will see a hand icon. You can click on that. That helps us knowing in knowing that you intend to speak, and we can have one speaker at a time. We have interpreters on this call. So if you would please state your name first and then your comments, this helps them do their job well. Anyone listening on the phone call, it also helps them knowing who is the speaker. Looking to make public comments during the public comment section, please do inform me now, or you can send me a message so that I can put you on the list for public comments. At this time, I would go ahead and take the attendance for AAC members. So please confirm your attendance. Alvar Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush.
Here.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Rico is here.
Yes, thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Kevin. Melanie Jackson.
Present.
Thank you. Steve is on the call with us. I do know that.
Present.
Thank you.
Sure.
K. McMahon.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. I know Ms. Rush is on the call with us. She is muted. Paul Semaford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simono.
I'm here.
Thank you. That concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting. At this point, I will go ahead and read the agenda for today's meeting. We just went through the roll call and introductions of the AAC members. Afterwards, we will have approval of today's prior meeting minutes and the board report. That will be once Chair moves the meeting, he will do that. At 5:40, Mr. Blake will present OIG special report on Metro Access. At 6 p.m., we do have third-party consultants to give us information about WMATA digital accessibility. 6:40 is a topic. We do have an amendment in the agenda. This topic added to the agenda. The topic is public hearings. And Dr. Posner, he's the chair of the AAC committee. He will give information about that. 7 p.m., we will have meeting minutes. excuse me, at 6:50, we will have the AAC 2021 agenda committee discussion. 7 p.m. meeting minutes, public comments, committee discussion. 7:05 public comments. 7:20 bus and rail subcommittee report. At 7:25, we will have Metro Access subcommittee report. And 7:30, the meeting will adjourn. At this point, Chair Posner, I would ask you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
No, thank you. And I've noticed on my Zoom, we have a new treat, which is closed captioning.
Yes.
And thank you for doing that. Hopefully the print is large enough for most people to see what's going on, but it's better than nothing. And whoever is doing the typing is keeping up pretty well with the verbal, so that's super. So we can start out with the approval of
it. Helps a lot. Thank you so much, Rico said.
You're welcome, Rico and Carrie. We can approve the new modified agenda. And if I don't hear any negatives, I'll take that as an approval. So are there any changes anyone would like to make? And hearing no changes, the agenda that Anu read out will be the one that will follow this evening. Prior meeting minutes. Hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to read the prior meeting minutes. We did change them somewhat in that we now are listing all of the motions that have been made and motions that have been approved. And we are appending any written comments that we receive from the public to be appended. And they will be posted on the website. So hearing no objections to the prior minutes that you have all received, I will take the minutes as being accepted. Next, we'll get to the board report. You've all had the board report. Hopefully everybody has read it. In addition to the board report, I hope everybody gets an opportunity to go to YouTube and listen to last Thursday's board meetings. There was the Finance Committee meeting and report from the Inspector General, and then the board meeting itself. Mr. Blake is going to talk about the Inspector General report this evening after I'm finished blabbing, getting approval on things. You'll also notice that we now are actually giving a live report to the board every month, as opposed to a recording, which is really nice. And you'll notice that this week we had a question and a very long discussion with the board about the new vans that we're going to be getting. And again, Mr. Blake will report more on the vans later this evening. So if anyone has any additions or comments about the chair's report to the board for this month, please let me know now. And if we don't hear anything, we'll assume that they are approved. I see no hands coming up. So we will take the chair's report to the board as being approved. So I believe, Anu, the next item on the agenda is Mr. Blake.
Yes.
Mr. Blake, it's all yours. And we do have a visual to go with that Anu sent out to us earlier. I believe we have the OI.
There we go. So I'm going to share my screen. And we'll go from there. And I'm trying to find the item on the screen here. Let's take that back. Bear with me, everyone. Sorry about that.
No worries. Well, sharing screen is not easy.
Yeah, we're just had it up. Okay. Hold on 1 second, bear with me, I'm sorry.
No worries.
We just had it up here now. What's going on here? Let me start it. Do y'all see the video?
No, sir.
Okay. No, I guess not. Hold on 1 second there. We're trying to do a PowerPoint presentation. I want you to have the screen. And
Mr. Blake, are you doing the OIG report first?
Or? Yes. Okay. Yes. It's the PowerPoint we were just doing.
Yes.
It's like it's disappeared from the screen.
True.
Okay, so we may have to rearrange that. What's the next item on the agenda?
Next one is the van PowerPoint.
Okay, the van wasn't a PowerPoint. So let's go through the van real quick and I'll come back to what's going on with this video. Oh, so earlier today,
I have your OIG report. If you want me to share the screen with you, I can do that.
No, it's a video. Do you have the video?
No, don't have the video. I just have this. Yeah.
Mr. Blake, yeah. I can pull that up if you would like.
Yeah, why don't you share it?
Okay, give me a quick minute. Did you want to still go ahead and do your other report first?
We want to talk about the van. So real quickly with the van, what I can share is that we have issued a solicitation. There, the earlier today I sent out, because I was trying to share with the committee members what I call the public facing aspects of the technical specifications, because it's a big document and there are a lot of specifications in there, but the ones that are most important, if you will, to the customer, to the rider, I try to extract those out to make it simple. And Anu shared the document earlier today with members of the committee, and it's posted in the March meeting minutes for this month. So you can go and look at it, but it's broken down. It's a total of 5 pages, and it's not all the specs, but again, these are what we consider to be the public facing specs. And it's broken down into sections, vehicle specifications, such as we want a low floor ramped equipped vehicle, minimum of 4 ambulatory passengers and 2 wheelchair passengers. And although I've been very highly speaking a lot of shared rides, I highly doubt we'll ever have 6 passengers in the vehicle at one time. But again, you should expect to be on shared rides when you're riding Metro Access moving forward. At least 1 passenger seat shall be a bariatric chair. One of the 2 wheelchair stations should be able to accommodate an oversized chair. We put in there to have USB chargers for cell phones. As I mentioned those several months ago, if we get a vehicle with everything we want on it, but it may not have USB charging ports, that's probably not going to be a deal breaker. So that's not a mandatory. I mean, we're asking for it, and we'll see some of the questions and feedback we get, but that's something we did put in there. And the possible chassis, I want you all to be aware of this, because I've said it before. We could end up with a vehicle that's another Ford Transit. We could end up with a Ford Transit that's a cutaway. And I think that's the point the chairman was bringing up with the board the other day, is that if we get a vehicle that's just a unibody, it may be difficult to make adjustments to it. This solicitation doesn't require a unibody, but there's certainly a possibility that someone could bid to provide us with a unibody. So it could be a Ford Transit, it could be a Ram ProMaster, or any other chassis that meets Buy America provisions. And again, that could be a cutaway, or it could be a one body vehicle that's almost off the lot, but needing upfitting. We've added some safety technologies we're requiring: forward collision warning, lane departure warning, rear view cameras. We've asked for an emergency door release, emergency exit in the back. We've asked for, you know, a compliant ramp that has at least 800 pounds of strength. Side barriers on the ramp to, in an attempt to prevent wheelchair rollover. So there's a lot of customer-facing technical specifications. Again, they were sent out today, but they're in the meeting materials portal, so you can read them at any time. And given that we're going to have a Metro Access subcommittee meeting later on this month, we'll certainly be open to having that as one of the topics if the committee wishes that to be the case.
I'll be happy to modify the agenda.
You'll be happy to modify the agenda. Okay, so
I'm doing it right now.
You're doing it now. Okay, so we will do that, and then we can discuss it more as we get to that time. So, I mean, I have any questions, but I think, Mr. Chairman, you really raised the issues. So if you want to talk about what you raised with the board, I think that's more of where we are at this point in time.
That's super. I had two questions based upon what was in there. And thank you. You've made it very easy this time for everybody to find it. And we will send you out the exact page in the quote, so you don't have to go through all 785 pages to find the descriptors. But one of the descriptors that you had was item L, antiviral device to provide forward-facing physical separation between passengers sitting behind other passengers. The protection device may be a removable shield which attaches to the stanchion or seat frame in front of the forward passenger. This option is to be priced and presented separately for WMATA review and approval. And I wondered, was that just the shield that we had suggested, or is there something magical to make it antiviral?
No, I think that's nice sounding talk. And if they have something greater than just a plain shield, that would be great as well. But no, there's nothing we're specifying that is magic to it at this point. But that's the beauty of going to the market, and let's see what the marketplace comes back with.
Well, super. And the other question, again, is the 800-pound limit on the ramp. As our vehicles, personal vehicles, get larger and larger, and our customers get larger and larger, I know our average patient that comes to us for electrophysiology studies is 320 pounds. And some of those chairs are close to 600 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure 800 pounds is going to be enough, or if we can, you know, what the ADA says about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, 800 is pushing it. If somebody needs something bigger than that, we're probably going to have to find a different accommodation. But at this point, the ADA doesn't have a specification above 800 pounds at this point. Again, that's a limit. We would be happy if somebody proposes much higher. I haven't seen much higher on fixed route or a general paratransit vehicle at this point, but that doesn't mean it's not out there, and that doesn't mean the market will not bring that to us.
No, super. I was involved in setting the standards by FTA for the ramps 5 years ago, and that was part of the discussion as people were getting larger and larger and the vehicles were getting larger and larger. So I just want to make sure we didn't suddenly get caught by an ex-Redskin football player that had some knee surgery and can't get on our vehicle to get to the games.
Right. And I'm with you.
Okay, that's super. I think that was it. We'll let you move ahead to your next presentation.
Okay, I think I see what my error is, but Anu, do you have the video?
Yes, I can
share. Okay, you go ahead and share. Thank you. Volume has to be higher. Yeah, please start over and turn the volume up.
Okay.
The volume control is right in the middle on the bottom.
Bear with me. Okay. No. I'm going to unshare and then reshare. So bear with me. I apologize. It's going to take me a quick second. I'll be right back.
Greetings, members of the Accessibility Advisory Committee and general public. This is Chris Blake, Managing Director of Access Services. If I sound a bit different, it is because I am using my computer voice for this video presentation. Just about all of you are aware of the report about Metro Access recently released by Metro's Office of the Inspector General. The report was titled Special Project Report, Metro Access Customer Complaint, Review of Pickup and Travel Times. This presentation is a brief update of what you can expect from Metro Access as a result of this special project report. Before we proceed, I would like to let you know that while this presentation is in video format, each slide transition will be announced, so that viewers with visual disabilities will be able to know exactly where we are in the presentation. In addition, for viewers with hearing disabilities, the presentation is fully captioned at the bottom of the screen. Slide 2. What was the origin of the Inspector General's special report? Well, a complaint submitted by a Metro Access customer to a congressional office was then referred to the Inspector General, which then initiated an investigation. The complaint, while broad in discussion scope, highlighted two specific trips. The complaint stated that Metro Access was inefficiently routing the customer's trips, and Metro Access vehicles were not taking the most direct routes between pickup and drop-off locations as a result of confusing GPS information. The complaint concluded that these shortcomings resulted in late pickups, lengthy onboard times, and circuitous routing. Slide 3. As we always do once we are made aware of service complaints, Metro Access conducted a review of the trips to identify shortcomings and opportunities to improve the service. The Metro Access findings of the customer's two trips were the following. For trip number 1, Metro Access found that the customer's time on board the vehicle exceeded the fixed route equivalent time by 18 minutes. The excessive onboard time could have been avoided had a pickup scheduled for that vehicle been moved in consideration of the time the customer had already been on board the vehicle. For trip number 2, the customer's trip was actually 13 minutes faster than the fixed route equivalent time. However, this trip did not follow a progressive route. The reason for poor routing was concluded to be GPS-related issues. Slide 4. Following its investigation, the Office of Inspector General developed 5 recommendations for Metro Access to implement. 1. establish a plan to monitor paratransit trip length performance, as suggested by the Federal Transit Administration, to meet its target performance goal in compliance with service criteria for complementary paratransit. 2. Update applicable areas of the MATA performance report and scorecard reporting, clearly showing on-time pickup performance information, not reporting it as on-time performance. 3. Require regular reporting and review of relevant metro access performance data, including on-time pickup and fixed route equivalent trip length. 4. Implement a new and effective real-time traffic information system that complies with the appropriate MATA procurement policy and supports the requirements of implementing the plan for a new paratransit scheduling system. And 5. Continue communication and engagement efforts with the AAC, disability community members, and other transit authorities and organizations for benchmarking and implementing real-time traffic information and appropriate paratransit technology scheduling system. Slide 5. The first change as a result of the Inspector General's special report is the name change of our most public-facing performance metric, on-time performance. The new name, as you will notice in the report staff prepares for you, is on-time pickup performance. This name change is intended to better highlight what is being measured when folks talk about Metro Access being on time. The next change is the addition of a new public-facing performance metric, alongside of on-time pickup performance. That new metric will be on board time compliance. The performance goal will be 90%, just like the on-time pickup goal. The metric will be measured on a per-trip time comparison basis. Actual onboard time versus the fixed route equivalent time. As a reminder, the fixed route equivalent time is the amount of time it would take a person to travel from your pickup location to your drop-off location if they were using bus and or rail service. If the trip on Metro Access is equal to or faster than the fixed route equivalent time, then that trip is in compliance with the onboard time performance standard. If the trip on Metro Access is even 1 minute longer than the fixed route equivalent time, then that trip is not in compliance with the standard. Even though onboard time will not be an official Metro Access performance metric until July 1, 2021, we have been tracking the performance. For your reference, we have included a chart show the onboard time fixed route equivalent performance since September 2019. You will notice that September 2019 through December 2019 were all in the high 91% range. January 2020 was 92%. February 2020 was 90%, the lowest in the past 17 months. March 2020 was 91%. Since April 2020, during the pandemic, when Metro Access is only scheduling direct trips, the metric has been at 96% or higher. Slide 6. What may change as a result of the Inspector General's report is the addition of a real-time traffic system to replace Metro Access' current use of turn-by-turn directions. As was stated during the February AAC Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, Metro Access believes in real-time traffic technology. That is why we invested in such technology previously. However, after the vendor changed its mapping engine, inadvertently causing the real-time traffic directions to become ineffective, we reverted back to turn-by-turn directions, which has been working well. This will be our tool until we can find the real-time traffic solution that works well for our customers and the service overall. Metro Access has a solicitation effort underway to secure real-time traffic service. A contract is expected to be awarded by this summer, and then Metro Access will engage in extensive live on-street testing. Once testing confirms the real-time traffic system of the selected vendor meets the standards required to support Metro Access, we will implement the system fleet-wide. However, if testing results do not yield confidence in the product, Metro Access will continue to use turn-by-turn directions indefinitely until an adequate real-time traffic solution is found. Slide 7. Things that will stay the same are: 1. Metro Access will continue to monitor trip length performance and address issues as they arise. We want to be very proactive in identifying scheduling, pickup and drop-off locations, drivers, or any other issues that could result in a customer being on board a vehicle longer than the fixed route equivalent time. The second thing that will stay the same is the commitment of staff to communicate updates to the Accessibility Advisory Committee and disability stakeholders in general with respect to our efforts at securing a real-time traffic solution, as well as our efforts at updating the scheduling and dispatch software package. Slide 8. Thank you for your attention to this presentation. At this time, please feel free to offer any questions or other feedback for dialogue.
Okay, now I don't know what happened with the scratch marks during the middle of the video, but we kind of got through through to the point, and I just want to, and I'm open to any questions or comments or understanding, but I hope folks understand and get that, yes, we are changing the name of the on-time performance metric. It's no longer on time. It's going to be on-time pickup, and that's already reflected in the reports you all are receiving. We're going to create a new performance metric that's going to be just as important, at least in the eyes of some people, as the on-time pickup performance, and that's going to be the on-board time compliance. But again, what that means is if your trip from your home to your destination or vice versa takes 2 hours on bus and or rail, you should expect to be on a Metro Access van for 2 hours. Doesn't mean you will be. Doesn't mean you will be, but you should expect it. And another thing you should expect is that on Metro Access, this is a public transit shared ride service. That's not going to change. So as you get into a van or a sedan, you should expect to have a pickup or a drop-off of another customer. Doesn't mean you always will, but you should expect it as a customer, because what you've ordered with Metro Access is public transportation. And I think it was just important for us to note that, so that if the belief, and I'm not saying it was, but we just want to be clear, if the belief when the articles were shared and the discussions were taking place is that due to the problems we had with the last GPS real-time traffic vendor means that Metro Access is going to be doing direct trips and quick, fast, you know, personalized trips indefinitely. That's not the result of this of this special report from the Inspector General. It is to come up with a real-time traffic solution that works and spend the taxpayers' money wisely in trying to accrue one. It does mean better transparency when we report what Metro Access being on time really means. It does mean we're going to show on a percentage basis how many trips are within the fixed route equivalent time. And we're going to continue our commitment to monitor these trips and continue our commitment to sharing updates with the AAC. The one thing we haven't committed to, in the sense, is that a timeline, a specific timeline to find a real-time traffic solution. We want to know by October the results of this current solicitation, and we'll test it. And once we award to a company that wins this, we'll test it. And if it seems to be working, then we'll roll it out and schedule some trips with individual members of the AAC so we can get your feedback. But if it seems to be working, we'll roll out the real-time traffic everywhere. If it's not working, if we experience some of the things we experienced with the last contractor, then what we're going to do is just continue to use turn-by-turn directions and continue to solicit for real-time traffic, for a real-time traffic solution, until we do find one that works. So I'll stop there. And if there are any questions, concerns, or ideas, we have a packed agenda tonight, but I'm available for any questions or concerns regarding the special report of the WMATA Office of Inspector General as it relates to Metro Access.
Thank you. Ms. Rush, your hand is up. Unmute yourself.
Yes, this is Denise Rush. So we have officially changed our on-time or our performance time. At one time, it was one time. Now it's officially 90 minutes.
It's officially 90%. Yes, ma'am. It's officially, it used to be, in terms of the public facing metric, it was 92%, but now to more align with, and this has been over a year, so this was a year ago, but yes, to more align.
Okay, I'm just saying we definitely changed it. I thought we had not changed it, that you said you were changing it, and I thought we had said, I thought it was going to be like it was, but I guess we have changed it and I missed the step. I could have missed it.
No, I think let's say it this way. You didn't miss a step. You didn't miss anything. Metro changed the metric from 92% to 90% to better reflect a public transit shared ride service and not a direct trip service. The AAC, and rightfully so, at least some members of the AAC preferred that it remain 92%. And we respect that and accept that. But as I stated at the time, 92%, even 90% really, but 92% in terms of a public transit, shared ride, multi-stop service that is not on a dedicated run right-of-way is... that's more of a direct trip service and not really public transit. We respect that you want the 92% metric. And of course, our goal is 100%. But no, our official public facing metric performance number is 90%.
Thank you.
What did you say, Phil?
Go ahead.
I'm still where I was. We've discussed it, especially I know Pat remembers discussing it. I mean, we've discussed it several times, so it was just changed just without even... It's without even being accepted or what. It's just changed.
The metric was changed to better reflect a public transit service as opposed to a direct trip service, yes.
If I might comment on this, at this point in the real world, whether it's 60%, 80%, 90%, 100%, it doesn't matter for two reasons. One, there's no equivalent fixed route existing anywhere now because of all the budget schedule changes and the route changes. The change in traffic, the change in ridership, the way people are currently being transported. So I think what needs to happen is, this is what exists at this point, but I think not this month, but next month, when we get a better feel for what's going on with COVID, we get a feel with what's going on with the federal funding and the budget and where we are, that we add this as a discussion item to Mr. Semelfort's Metro Access Committee to talk about.
Consider it already done. Yeah, we'll be receiving our revised agenda in the next few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Because the point right now is, and one of the questions I would have asked is, how do you calculate a fixed route trip at this point? The other question I will ask when Mr. Semelfort discussed it at his meeting was something we brought up quite a while ago, is if there's a late pickup, it's a free ride. If there's a late delivery, will it be a free ride? And again, not to discuss now, but it's something that I think we will be discussing at the next meeting. So there is a tooth in the regulation as to what goes on. I also see that Mr. Torres has his hand up, and I'll ask if there's anyone else from the committee that wishes to speak.
Yes. And
if not, we'll go to the public if they have any questions about the last discussion.
Chair Posner, can you hear me?
Yes.
No. Steve wants to make a comment or question. Steve.
Yeah, please. Go ahead. We'll do the committee first, and then we'll go to the public. Steve,
you need to unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. And Mr. Blake, I just have a question. In calculating the metric to be used, it seems as though it could be rather complicated, and I'm wondering how it might be done. So, for example, somebody, the metric would be somebody, a rider leaving their home instead by foot to a bus and taking the bus and then needing to transfer to a metro and getting to their destination. It seems as though creating that metric might be rather complex. I wonder if there's a way that it's going to be done.
Yes, if you look at, well, the easiest way to look at it for everybody who has access at the moment, you look at Google Maps and you put down the option of two points, a pickup location or a starting location and an ending location, and you use transit as your travel option as opposed to a personal car or walking, you will see that time in there. That is very similar to the fixed route equivalent time. But with us, we use the world-class trip planner. In the trip planner, you put in a pickup location or a starting location. You put in a drop-off location, and that will tell you the amount of time you will be using public transit, fixed route public transit, to get from point A to point B.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. So no other hands up. Let's go to Mr. Torres. 3 minutes.
Yes. My question is, why exactly is it taking so long for Metro Access to procure a GPS system that works? I mean, GPS has been around for quite a while. Uber is using it. UPS is using it. FedEx, there's all kinds of folks that's using it successfully. Why is it at Metro Access that we can't seem to get GPS right? I mean, that's a real puzzle to me. And a quick question about the last issue that you talked about with the van procurement is, are there standards that are being applied? I'm assuming that they are, but are those standards available so that we can read those standards so that we can measure what we're getting versus the standards that you're supposed to be following? Thank you.
Okay, so the first question is a great question because I'm using real-time traffic in my vehicle. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we did, let's back up a minute. Metro did, even before I arrived, did in fact procure a real-time traffic solution. And for a while, it appeared to be working. But then we started hearing from customers and discovering U-turns and mixed routes and all kind of things happening. And then further investigations, we saw that they changed their mapping engine, which created some other issues. That's a fair question. Why does it seem hard when you've got all these real-time traffic tools?
I can offer Mr. Blake if you're
available, right. But why is that a challenge? But Terry, you want to chime in?
This is Terry Ann Williams-Hall, Director for Metro Access. Good afternoon. So unlike our personal vehicles that only has to interact with the vehicle and the instructions that we put in, any GPS system that we procure has to integrate with Trapeze. And that is the challenge. So we can only get an application that easily integrates with Trapeze because the trip data is pulled directly from the Trapeze application. And there's only a few companies that are willing to partner and utilize the Trapeze application. So every time we solicit, the responses are minimal.
Okay, that's fair. That's a great point. So now to that point then, and following up with Mr. Torres's question and the larger point that was also brought up in the OIG's report, Metro, your team, you and a handful of other folks are working diligently to not only get a solicitation for real-time traffic, but potentially a new scheduling and dispatch software package as well.
That is correct. We're in the middle of the procurement process now with the real-time traffic solicitation. We have received, it has been advertised.
And if that's the case, And I'm asking, you know, I kind of know, but I'm asking you as an advocate in this case, how much of a challenge, let's say, and again, as I've had to point out, no company is eliminated from that solicitation. So the incumbent company could in fact win, but what if another company happens to win? Will the same challenge be, do we anticipate the same type of challenge in terms of integrating a third party real-time traffic solution with them still be in place?
Yes, regardless of whatever company bids or is interested in it, they must integrate with Trapeze.
Well,
I'm talking about on the new scheduling.
Oh, in the event that we, the new scheduling software, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, so the way that we wrote the solicitation for the new scheduling software is that we're proactively requiring that anybody that responds to the RFP does so with the understanding that it will have to integrate with all of our applications. So they don't reserve the right at that point to resist that integration.
Ms. Phil Posner, I have a question. This goes back to the Sedan solicitation. I understand what you want to do and have everything integrate with your scheduling software. Is there any reason that you can't purchase a standalone GPS system for navigation? And the reason I suggest that is everyone I have ever seen gives you the option of current location to where you want to go. And so can you not just mount a separate device, be it a cell phone or a separate device, where the driver inputs the next stop starting at the current location? And that way you don't run into what happened before where the sedans had to be upfitted and the sedans. Here's something that you can just get the best GPS system available in the world and install it on the vans next to Trapeze.
I'll let Terrian respond to that, but I will say, I remember we discussed that.
Yes.
Even said, hey, I've got a Costco car. Let's just go down there and just buy a bunch of XYZ. I don't want to call any names out because the solicitations. But there were challenges with that, and you named one of them, Mr. Chairman, which is the driver inputting information. But Terrian, do you want to elaborate more on that question?
Well, that was the primary roadblock with us moving in that direction, because the driver would have to stop in between trips, naturally, and utilize the information coming from the MDT. There'd have to be additional real estate in the device to store both the MDT and this other device, and then go from the MDT to the other device to put the information in. We absolutely considered that, did quite a bit of discovery with regard to that, and decided that simply because of risk associated with our electronic device use policy, that was not the best move for us.
But haven't other transportation companies figured this out already? I mean, I can't imagine that everybody that does paratransit in this country are having this kind of problem. We seem to choose the wrong system. I mean, Trapeze is what I've been hearing of was the excuse for a lot of different things not happening at Metro Access. Well, and I'm so sick and tired of hearing about this Trapeze problem. Why don't we just throw them out since they're strangling us? I mean, it really seems to be the problem here.
Okay, so time out. Let me put for the record, we're not throwing any of our vendors out, anybody who's potential vendor, any incumbent vendors. So I got to put that on the record. That's a customer who's saying that. And again, yes, Trapeze, like other companies and other industries, has built a good base of clients across the country. And I think what happened here, again, the change in the mapping engine seems to be what created these problems in this particular case. We'll just leave it at that. But yes, in most cases, we chose to go in a different route through the open solicitation competitive process. Whereas Trapeze has its own solution, we chose to go in a different direction with a company that needed to integrate with Trapeze. We're a fair, open competition entity. I hear your frustration. There's a solicitation for real-time traffic. There's a solicitation for scheduling. No company is excluded. And whoever wins these fair and open competition, that's who staff has to work with.
Great, Mr. Blake, thank you. Getting back on our schedule, the agenda, I think our next item is the WMATA Digital Accessibility Third Party, Anu.
Yes, so let me just start real quick. I don't hate to dominate tonight, but so many things need to just be said on the record. So this next meeting agenda item involves accessibility and usability of the WMATA.com website. This is primarily an introduction of the consultant team Metro has hired to assess the website, identify quick fixes and improvements, and identify more intensive necessary improvements that may require a bit more time to accomplish. As I've mentioned in these meetings before, the WMATA.com website has been graded out at 93% AA compliance, which means the site is generally accessible, but some minor problems exist that make it more difficult to use the site, and 85% AAA compliance, which relates to optimization to the highest, optimization to the highest level of screen readers with all aspects of compliance. Both of these numbers are pretty good, but again, we're striving to further improve on these ratings and in response to concerns and recommendations from users in the disabilities community, Metro has issued a solicitation to bring in a third-party consultant with direct experience in the area of improving digital accessibility to speed along our efforts. Tonight, you will hear from the consultant team members, and there is enough time for AAC members and those in the public to share one very specific digital accessibility improvement each of you would like to have take place. This is not the time for speeches or long drawn out conversation. We will have a separate 2-hour special AAC digital accessibility conversation with the consultants activity scheduled in the very near future. So the longer drawn out conversations and changes you would like, let's save it for that. But if any of you have any immediate quick fixes that you would like this team to focus on, tonight is a good time to share it so that the consultant team can get a sense of what the challenges are from your perspective. We've shared ours, but right, they want to hear from you, the customer. So Kim Alfonso, if you want to take the mic and introduce yourself and your team, we can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. Good evening, everyone. I want to thank Mr. Blake and WMATA for this opportunity to serve as the vendor for the Digital Accessibility Evaluation for ADA Project. And I also want to thank the committee for your ongoing commitment to accessibility. Again, my name is Kim Greenfield Alfonso, and I am CEO of Results One LLC. We are a training and a digital accessibility consulting firm that works with nonprofits and companies to assist them in creating an environment that embodies dignity, respect, accessibility, and inclusion. As it relates to digital accessibility, we work with companies and nonprofits to provide digital accessibility testing to ensure that websites, mobile apps, PDFs, videos, etc., are fully accessible to all people with disabilities. What many of you do not know is that my foray into into the disability field began 21 years ago when my daughter Alexandra was born. She was born with Peter's anomaly, which resulted in her having very limited vision, being a Braille reader, and a cane traveler. I'm proud to say she is now a sophomore at Catholic University, having taken a gap year to attend the Perkins School for the Blind College Success Program. Like many parents, I'm sure many of you on this Zoom, when you have a child with a disability, you immerse yourself in learning as much as possible to become the best advocate for your child. So this topic of disability is personal to me as I have watched my daughter through the years struggle with online, PDF, mobile app access issues during school and college, applying for scholarships, internships, and most recently trying to access a list of COVID testing sites online that was inaccessible to her. And for the past 20 years, I have been working in the blindness industries on boards and parent organizations such as the Montgomery County Commission for People with Disabilities, the DC Advisory Board for Special Education, and the Maryland School for the Blind. I am also a member of the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind, and more recently served as Chief Operating Officer at Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind for 12 years until I started my business. I started CLB's accessibility insurance business in 2014, winning contracts within the federal and corporate sectors. So for the past several years, as COO for CLB and now CEO for Results One, I have been dedicated to ensuring digital accessibility for people with disabilities, recognizing that it also benefits all users. We have provided testing for restaurants, hotels, assisted living centers, nonprofits, state, local governments, even a company.
I don't want to interrupt you, but we are really running behind, and if we could just get to the meat of the presentation.
Okay, so I will stop here, and I will introduce my team members who are both certified technical experts in accessibility. I will first introduce Victor Espinosa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you, everyone. My name is Victor Espinosa. I'm a software engineer working in the digital area for over 17 years, and for me, the accessibility path was presented as a way of equality for everyone. And that's what drives me into this work. I'm here to provide automated audits, manual audits, and support on the technical issues for recommendations.
Thank you, Victor. And next is Citlali Rioja.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Victor. Hello, everyone. My name is Citlali Rioja. I'm a Latinx. I am in my late 20s. I'm also a certified professional in accessibility core competencies by the IAAP and the tech lead for this project. I am visually impaired and use mobility and accessibility aids on the daily. I am very excited to work with everyone here. We plan to audit the existing content in the website and analyze the process that creates this content to prevent and avoid any future accessibility issues. We believe in prevention before correction. Our process includes automated audits, manual audits, remediation, which is the process that addresses and fixes the issues, regression testing, which is another round of to ensure that these issues have been indeed fixed, compliance, finally, and then monitoring. We do not let anything escape there. For this project, we will be evaluating accessibility and usability in equal measures. This is why we use automated tools and manual testing by blind and sighted testers. Results One has separated work into three phases. The first one will be external elements like WMATA.com. The second phase will be internal elements. The third phase will be training and recommendations. Phase one has already started, and we are gathering information right now. We are here to help in every sense we can, and a big part of that is listening to your feedback and experiences. For this very reason, we would like to ask, is there anything else we can do to help you? Are there any questions?
Thank you. Mr. Blake, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you. What I'd like to do is let the committee have their comments. The major comments, just to summarize earlier, has been the usability and the search and find. So far, we have found once we can find something on the very complicated website, it's pretty usable, except for graphs and numbers and things for the sighted group. But one of the major complaints is actually finding something. So that when Mr. Blake told us the RFP was located on this particular part of the site, actually finding the RFP and then finding what part in the 1800 pages we wanted to read was the not particularly usable part that we had. So that's the sort of thing that we're worried about. What I'm looking forward to, and I'll ask everybody to limit their comments to 2 minutes. We are going to have 2 hours with you guys at a later time where we can really go into depth. So I would ask everyone to say, number one, top of your head, and limit it to 2 minutes, and then we can get back onto our schedule. So Anu, checking for hands up.
So far, I see none. Okay, Director Torres has
Let's do the committee first.
If there's any committee member.
You see Patrick's hand is up.
Yes, okay. Patrick, go ahead. Patrick, you need to unmute yourself. There you go.
Mr. Sheehan.
I'm sorry, I thought I had unmuted myself. This is Pat Sheehan. Real quick, can you tell me what your automated tools are that you're using and what are your, what do you do for manual testing?
Okay, so the automated tools that we're using currently, there's two. Right now we've been using Accessme just for automated. And
you're using what? Hang on, wait a minute. You're using what?
Accessme just for automated, and we've also used AMP. So those are the two tools that we are very familiar with. And then I'll let answer the...
And manual testing?
Yes, for manual testing, we will be using NVDA, we will be using JAWS, we will be using MAGIC, and we will be testing for, well, we will be testing a lot, honestly. We will be testing in Windows, and we will be testing for Mac, as well as iOS and Android.
Okay.
Thank you. I will ask you, when you're doing some of your testing, are you also testing for the population of the folks that are going to be cognitively challenged?
Yes.
Some of the verbiage is very complex, and we might want to do it a little bit more simply. If we have no one else from the committee, Mr. Torres, please take a couple of minutes.
Yes. So my understanding from your presentation is that you plan to meet the WCAG 2.0 AA standard. It seems as though WMATA is saying that they are already there. I'm not quite sure how they got there. Was it you guys who did the testing that gave WMATA that information about 93% and 85%?
No, that was internal.
Okay.
It'll be 2.1 AA is what we'll be testing against.
Okay. All right. So my issues, because I think that's one of the things I was asked, or the biggest issue I've been having with WMATA, and I've been complaining about it for over a year now, is that it fails the usability standard, the understandability standard set out by WCAG. And basically, you have a link on the homepage that says accessibility, but people who are not experienced accessibility experts, people who are not tuned in to all of that kind of terminology, accessibility doesn't mean too much. It does not provide an explanation as to what accessibility means. The word disabled, the word paratransit, the word metro access, the word blind, none of that is on WMATA's homepage. So from a usability standpoint, from an understandability standpoint, I don't know how that could pass any kind of WCAG test if that very minimum thing is not being met. And that's just one. And I have several comments about the budget document because it's accessible in a number of ways, but there are things that are upside down. There are links that should be there that are not there. And I'm now starting to read the document. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is very helpful.
Barbara?
Hello. Thank you very much for coming this evening. I have low vision. I'm wondering if you and your tools will be assessing things from a perspective of someone who has partial sight and is choosing to use that sight. In particular, I'm very interested in using the WMATA app while I am traveling. That means on an Android smartphone, if you go in the trip planner, the text is not large enough. It would be really great if you guys could have the website text be larger, have an option for it to be larger.
Thank you.
Barbara, this is Phil. I just got your message. And if you go to the bottom of the Zoom, there is on the far right, right next to reaction, CC, which says live transcript. And if you click on that, you can hide the captioning.
Okay, I think I was playing in there. I will continue to look. I'm on the phone right now, so it might appear different than what you're seeing.
Yeah, you may not be able to do it on the phone, but if you get onto a computer, that's how you can blank out the closed captioning.
Okay.
Thank you. Ms. Alfonso, thank you very much. I apologize if I cut you a little bit short, but we know you're
<Thank> good. You.
And we look forward to getting together for 2 hours.
Great, we do too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Anu, I think I may be up next.
About public hearings.
Yes, I'll be very brief because, as always, Anu is ahead of me, and she has sent out the information that is located on the WMATA website about when the hearings are. They will be virtual, and you can speak at that, or you can send in a written comment, which they will read at that hearing. You can just send in a written comment and say you're not interested in appearing. You can also fill out the survey. You will read a lot of things in the news. I've heard from a lot of people who are panicking about their metro stations being shut down, their 19 stations being closed, and everything else happening. If you listen to the Finance Committee report, the way WMATA works, it's very easy to add service. It's very difficult to remove service. And right now, they know how much money they have. They know how much service they can provide. The things that will change that for the good or for the evil are going to be COVID, ridership levels, and federal support. So right now, Mr. Wiedefeld presented that they are currently fine through June of 2021. That's this year, which is why they put back some of the service that they were taking off. Should they get the CARES package passed, at the amount that they think they're going to get it passed, they should be okay all the way through to the next fiscal year. But should something not happen and COVID get worse, the government not have come across with the money, or some other disaster occurs, then that is the worst case scenario that they're giving you to discuss. So I think it's important that we all show up, take the surveys, write our written comments, thank them for maintaining the current service for Metro Access, tell them what they would like to see happen based on the worst case scenario, because they will have to make decisions based on that worst case scenario, but also know it's a moving target. And so they will probably have another set of budgets to approve in the next 2 months based upon what the federal government does. They will revise it again come September once the COVID inoculations have become somewhat complete. So that's where we are, and it's always been our role to participate. We all have our own groups that we represent on bus and rail and Metro Access, as well as our own. And when you comment, remember, you're commenting for yourself and you're commenting for all the people that talk to you and that you listen to. And so I'm just asking you all to participate. Anu also forwarded to you a survey that's coming out from Senior and FTA that I think it's worthwhile having us fill out so they have some more numbers again to see how the senior population is going to be impacted in travel and transportation. So that's basically what I have to say about that information. One of the things that I am asking them to do in mind, even though it's not in the budget, and I asked it in my report to the board, is to continue the work that they're doing with wayfinding. I think that's critical for both the sighted and the non-sighted, the elderly and the young communities. Anyone that has wandered around in various metro stops trying to find things. Any of us that has wandered around at various bus stops trying to figure out which bus is the one that we want to take to go where we want to go, it's important. So one of the things that I'm asking for is more wayfinding funding. And anything that you folks think of, support it. I mean, you're all individuals as well as members of the committee. So that's what I have to say about the budget and about the hearings.
Dr. Posner, if I may add just one quick comment. Anybody who would like to make public comments and would need ASL interpreters, please contact the office, the board secretary's office. And if you need to contact me, please go ahead, you know, feel free to contact me and I will share the information. But they do ask that the request comes in at least 24 hours in advance of the public hearing. There are 3 days, yes. So that's what I wanted to share. If you have any questions, Office of Board Secretary is available to answer any questions. And if you'd need to contact me, and please do, I'll be more than happy to share your, forward your comments and get responses.
Thank you. And I think the next item on the agenda is the AAC 2021 agenda.
Yes, sir.
I'm pretty good. I'm trying to keep up.
You're doing a very good.
Okay. What we have been doing so far is continuing what we've been doing, which is listening to the public, listening to the board, paying attention to what's going on. We have been pretty limited in dealing with budget issues and some of the accessibility that we're dealing with. I think what we need to do is start thinking about in our dreams, what we would like to happen come September when everyone is inoculated with things that work for the variants as well as for the old COVID. And we have full funding for WMATA again, and we're all leaving our homes and getting out and doing stuff. So what I'd like you all to think about is what projects we'd like to work on. I'll start it off by suggesting we form a working group on wayfinding, and we look at AIRA, A-I-R-A. One of the things that I have discovered is AIRA, which is the system where you can use a cell phone video hooked up to a guide that will act as your eyes in finding locations and getting in locations. I work at the Library of Congress, and all federal buildings right now provide what they call free access to AIRA. So when you're on Capitol Hill, you can wander around and you can find things. Someone is actually looking ahead of you and saying, telling you where you're going, what's to the right, what's to the left, where are you? When we're in dark metro stations, it would be really nice to have that. Now, the problem with AIRA is it costs some money. But they, as a company, have set up free use, free access zones. Capitol Hill is one of them. Federal buildings is another. Walmart and some other private companies have done that. And so one of the things that I have thought about is having a committee that looks into how that does work and possibly develop partnerships with private and WMATA to provide free access zones. Any of you that have been dropped off at Pentagon City Mall or any of the large malls in Pee Gee County, and you find out that the GPS has a single address for all of the stores in that mall, and you're trying to find one particular store or one particular location, you're lost. Even with good vision, let alone lower vision, let alone no vision, let alone cognitive problems. And so I'd like to have a group that would work on that type of wayfinding over the next 3 to 4 months and come back in September and let's talk about it and go to the board with it. So I'm throwing that out. I don't expect volunteers right now. Think about what you want to do, even though I'm going to expect Patrick to chair it.
There we go. I'll be there, Phil.
Thank you. And put together that group. So I'll throw it open to the rest of the committee, anything that you guys in your dreams would love to have and what we should be working on. Tino, at one point, remember, we were talking about getting a group together that worked with all of the accessibility committees on the Eastern Seaboard, like Boston, Philadelphia, New Jersey, a little bit west to Chicago, and see if we can work with them and they can work with us. You've been very good with New York. We get your New York flyers all the time. But do we want to expand that and, you know, get that group activated a little bit more? So that's it for me. I'm done. Anybody else? The silence is deafening.
This is Barbara.
Barbara, yes.
I'm not on the committee, but I would like to see more emphasis on the senior population, please.
Fantastic. You have been great with the lighting project, Barbara.
No, Phil, I am not you are not excluded from putting light bulbs in the fixtures just because you have ERA.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is,
I'm joking.
The group has been really useful and helpful and done more work than any one of us has ever done on the lighting project. And if we can get an external senior citizens group to work with us, that would be terrific.
Well, and you have Steve and Tino and a bunch of yourself and a bunch of others, depending on how you rate and rank the seniors. Some are over 50, some are over 65, etc.
Well, AARP takes 45-year-olds. And Ms. Fisher, my feeling is there's chronological aging and then there's physiological aging. So anybody that feels they are physiologically an older person, please, let's put together a group. And I'm happy to take a volunteer from the committee to work on that and hopefully work with some of the outside groups on those sorts of things for seniors. You know, the bench height is something for the seniors that we can all work on. I said some pretty nasty things to the board this month about the height of the benches and the fact that they continue to ignore us.
And the lack of benches.
Well, I said that too. I said height first and then get them out so that you don't have to stand for the 30-minute wait times we're currently having on stuff. So, Barbara, I think that's a great idea. We are, before the Accessibility Committee, we became the elderly and disabled. So, yeah, I always consider the older population.
Thank you for the idea of the adding work groups.
And Deborah, would you like to add something about cognitive issues?
Well, I was just going to say there are two things. The first is Montgomery County has, of course, a transportation roundtable that does look at all of these issues with regard to seniors as well as those with disabilities. So from that perspective, that's a good group to take some of these issues to, because they meet on a regular basis and they're convened by the JCA. There are lots of issues, I think, that we can talk about as we spend more time when it comes to there are the cognitive issues, and there are also those with developmental disabilities for whom overstimulation is an issue, both all types of overstimulation. So we always have to think about that.
Okay. We have Donnie Bush, and then followed by Anthony Oberg.
This is Darnie's suggestions. I would like to see more than one person information booth. Maybe, and I'd also like to see extended training of the personnel that is in the information booth. Because I think it's kind of unreasonable to have one person at the information booth, and then and the platform is on a different level, and the stations are very large, and people have difficulties, especially with cognitive difficulties or physical difficulties. So maybe you could come up with some kind of idea, maybe volunteers that are trained to look out for, citizens that need assistance. But I'd like to see more help, more physical help in the stations.
Bernice, that's a great point. One thing, we might take a look at what the various education departments are doing with classroom assistance, because that's exactly the sorts of things that you need in the booth. It's going to be a budget issue, whether it can be afforded or not, but if there's a way that we can get a group of volunteers, Gold Star transit volunteers, that again, liability issues could be addressed and whatever, but that's something that's worth working on. I think that's a reasonably good project. If you'll write out something as a start, we can put that on the agenda for bus rail or for the AAC. And then we can get moving on that as something that we want to work on for the year. That'd be super. Anthony, I think you have your hand up.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good. This is Anthony. I just wanted to say I think I really like the idea of the working group with the specificity that you mentioned, Phil, about using IRA and navigability and all that sort of thing. But I also, through some of the other comments, was recognizing that perhaps there could be a more general working group to sort of keep track of all the different groups that exist that we could identify, as you were saying, as partners to help us do some of the advocacy work that, as you said, if we had everything we wanted and all the funding was back, what are the things that we could do? And I think one of the things is sort of being able to keep more on top of sort of the regional and jurisdictional partners and little entities that might be doing some of the boots on the ground work.
Anthony, that's great. You have been doing that to some extent right now, is taking a look at the other agencies that do similar work to us, that are various disability-related groups. And if you'd be willing to work on that with some other volunteers, what we can do is develop a contact feedback back and forth so that we're not reinventing the wheel.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the
it was the cut that light on over there.
I think the point I'm making is that establishing the process, I think, would be something, because we do this work sort of as we go, but having a whole process for it, and like you said, the feedback loop would be helpful.
Well, that'd be super. I know in our lobbying efforts, what we do is we have primary things where we take the lead, we have secondary things where we collaborate, and we have tertiary things where we are on board to help them. Tina, you had your hand up on the screen, but not on that. Did you want to say something?
Yes, I've passed around a
cadre called the information on the cadre called ambassadors used by the BART system out San Francisco way. They're paid, they're unarmed, but they do wear uniforms and they help everybody. They deal with people having social problems or perhaps mental problems. But there's also in every airport, at least that I've, the big airports I've been in the US have volunteers, transportation desks. Well, I don't know what they're called, but they staff information desks at crucial points within the airport. And those are volunteers. So maybe we had volunteers like that at especially the big station. You know, I have problems in the Silver Spring station, which is two levels. And to try and find, you know, the right bus, et cetera, I usually have to ask another rider. But if we had a cadre of volunteers with at an information desk, that might be helpful.
Yeah, one of the things that the district does during tourist season is they have people on street corners that are giving directions and helping you find your way and whatever. So that's something we might develop. And again, once we put this down, I think step one is to develop a working group that's willing to work on that and put together ideas and contacts as to how you can do that. WMATA itself is now working on its great equitability policies and are working with the police department, WMATA PD, on that. And we could do something like that that's not directly through WMATA PD, but we might be able to do that for bus and rail stations to make things more readable and more understandable. Again, the typical rider that doesn't ride on the same bus route every single day doesn't know 52 from 52A from 53B from 47. They just know where it's starting, where they're standing, and where it's going. They don't know what the stops are in between. So, yeah, and I like that. You know, call them guides, call them ambassadors, call them what. But I think at the next meeting, when we put something like this on our agenda, which hopefully we will, we'll have some volunteers to chair the groups and take the next step. Because these are all things we're starting with. We're not going to finish this year. As you know, a lot of things we do take more than 1 year to get done. But so far, those are really good ideas. Tina, you still have your hand up. I'm sorry. Patrick, you still have your hand
yes,
up.
Yes, thank you, Phil. Got a couple of things. Got a short-term thing, which I don't want to talk about, but I will. And I've got a couple of long-term things. Short-term thing is, I believe at the end of March, we're losing David. And I would very much, in the short term, like to figure out what David has in his head for projects that that affect WMATA that he won't be able to complete since he's leaving at the end of the month. So I think short-term wise, it might be good for AAC leadership to figure out where we are on some of the ideas that David has. And I think
we will force him to give us an exit interview.
What's that?
We will force him to give us an exit interview.
Yes, I think that, and thank you, David, for all the work that you've done. The second thing that I will say in terms of a general sort of theme that I'm seeing with the disability community is a theme of health and wellness, making sure that when we're able to get out and about, that people with disabilities will be able to get out and about in a safe way. One of the things that I've been working on or working against or trying to promote here is making sure that construction, things like floating bus stops, which I think are dangerous, aren't perpetuated in the area. And so perhaps looking to see what kind of construction is being done would be useful, so that things like that don't just sort of pop up. We have some idea that this is what's being looked at. And then the third thing that I would say, along with the health and wellness idea, would be to perhaps let's take a look and see if there are any issues that we can work together with the RAC to see if we can jointly sponsor some projects. I think that would be good. I would think that most of the initial ideas might come from this group, but I think it's always positive when we can come up with joint recommendations from the two groups. But I think our most important thing is an exit interview with David to see what he hasn't finished, and then move on from there. The other thing, and I think Anthony sort of talked about this, the other thing that I would like to see us do is whenever we have projects, let's put some benchmarks out there so that we know what we're doing. Let me go back to the IT stuff. You know, we need to take a look at what we want to do and what we want to achieve at the 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, 12 month intervals, so that we can measure progress, and not just in that area, but in other areas, to make sure that we can, you know, as you're reporting to the board, we have things that we want to meet, timelines we want to meet, and if we don't meet them, that's fine, but at least we know what we're striving for. That's a few of the ideas I have.
No, I like that, Patrick, and again, deliverables are your favorite word, and so we'll say deliverables, and we might do something like an extra sandwich if we meet our deliverables.
There we go, yeah.
Or no food if we don't meet our deliverables, so we can do that.
Yeah, good.
We're on schedule now, and Anu, I think you've got a long list of good stuff to go in the minutes. And I will put the, once the minutes come out, I'll go ahead and see if we can't get a chart put up. And at the next meeting, we can discuss who wants to chair the different groups and set some timelines as to what we want to do, who we want to invite from WMATA to help us out and move forward. And I think we're up to our public comment period, and we're back on time.
Yes, so meeting minutes is the next topic before we move on to the public comments section.
Right, well, the meeting minutes, basically I gave in the introduction when we started out, and that is where we are, and that we're permitting public to submit written comments if they think their time is shorter than they needed to say everything they wanted to say. Or if they think that our summary of the minutes, which is something that we traditionally do, we have all voted on and continue to do, and they want verbatim records, they're welcome to submit those, and they will be accepted as part of the minutes. The other thing was the change that we announced earlier, that we will lead off every set of minutes with a list of action items, similar to what the board does, which will be motions made, motions passed. And that way people can quickly see what we did and what we have accomplished. So that's pretty much what we had wanted to talk about on the meeting minutes. And I'll throw it open if anybody on the committee wants to, you know, add something to the meeting minutes or what have you. Otherwise, we'll go forward with that plan. Okay, so I think we're ready for public comment.
Okay, Mr. Torres wants to make some public comments. Mr. Torres, go ahead.
Yes. Okay. One of the things that I think that is greatly needed at Metro Access, well, I shouldn't say Metro Access, I should say WMATA, as well as the AAC, I really believe that the system is dysfunctional and it's broken, and it's in desperate need of reforms. And on the top of the list of those reforms on the WMATA side, I believe there needs to be a top to bottom sensitization of the senior staff at WMATA. And that could eventually trickle down to the folks lower down on the totem pole. But there really seems to be an absence of sensitivity on disability issues. And I find that extremely shocking and bothersome. And I believe that is why WMATA is so, I think, off target on accessibility issues when it comes to persons with disabilities. And there is no excuse why it's only today that we're getting a consultant to come in to talk about accessibility and seemingly, well, I don't want to talk too fast yet, you know, really take the bull by the horns on 508 and try and clean up the mess. There are a lot of other ideas I have, which I will submit in writing where it's appropriate. And then on the AAC side, I believe that AAC is adrift on its primary mission. I believe that members of the AAC seem to present their personal opinions on what should happen as opposed to doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is listening to the community and then articulating that to WMATA. The AAC is a listening post. If you read the bylaws, that's what it essentially says. And I think that definitely needs to happen. Also, I mean, shockingly, I believe there is sensitivity training that's needed on the AAC. Basically what's going on here is that you have the chair of Busrail having speakers from WMATA and externally coming in to talk about a topic using pictures and images and not telling or reminding the folks who are doing the presentations that they need to describe what's going on their slideshow presentation. I am extremely disgruntled and upset about that. And I cannot believe that on a board or a committee that is supposed to be advocates for the disabled are essentially not even doing a basic thing as sensitizing the presenters. And if they're WMATA presenters, they really should already be sensitized. But if you have somebody presenting at your committee and they are not respecting us who are visually impaired by describing presentations, you need to tell them, hey, there are blind folks here who need to hear what you're talking about because they don't get it. And I believe the blind folks on the committee need to speak up more and say, hey, we're not understanding what you're talking about because you're giving me pictures. I can't do nothing with that. And I am a little concerned that there isn't enough of that going on. And that is why I believe that something needs to be done in that area. One of the last thing I want to mention, there's supposed to be a work plan that spells out what you guys are doing for the year. And that is supposed to be shared with the general manager as discussed in the bylaws. Is there a document called a work plan that currently exists that can be shared with me and other members of the public that the AAC is supposed to be producing annually? Thank you.
So, Mr. Torres, I will say, at least for my subcommittee for Metro Access, I know I do annually draft a work plan, and I always say it's a living document for the Metro Access subcommittee, and you know, ideas and things can be shifted. So I know I do that at least annually, and it's worked on a monthly basis from that. And that's how we drive our topics based on that and whatever else that may come out from WMATA staff. So at least that's, I can describe that at least from the Metro Access subcommittee level.
Does the general manager know about your document, sir?
Yes, because those are submitted as part of the minutes to go out. Because I usually typically do this in June or July of every year. And then there's a document that tracks all of that information every month as part of our subcommittee packet every month. And if you would like me to share those documents with you, I have no problems in doing that.
Yeah, those are done on an annual basis for the entire AEC, for bus rail, and for Metro Access. And Mr. Blake, as the director, sends his annual report of what we have done, what we have accomplished, what we have set forward to do. So that's something that is a living document. We usually address it at, well, at the subcommittee level, it's often addressed at every meeting because it's a moving target. But we have our core things that are completed and moved on. We have interim reports that come out in our minutes on a regular basis. Tina, you have your hand up and you're muted, so unmute yourself.
When we usually met at headquarters, at each meeting, there would be on the desk before you enter our conference room a chart. I forget what it's called, but it had various work items and a status report on where things stand. Some things were still open, some things were continuing. So there's always been that, and that was available at each meeting in headquarters before the meetings happened. Anu, can you give us the formal name of that chart?
Well, it's work plan. It's the work plan for each of the subcommittees and right. For the whole AAC.
The work plan.
We do that. We also, again, do prep our invited speakers as to what their presentation should be like. In some instances, we request a representative from a division within WMATA or someplace else. And we don't always know who we're going to get and who's going to come in. So on occasion, we do have a situation where we don't receive the handouts beforehand. And that's just life in the world. I mean, I was a teacher and I invite somebody to come in and they couldn't come in that day and they sent one of their friends to come in and give the lecture and I didn't have a copy of the slides beforehand. But I would have to say that a large percentage of the time that we do get everything in an accessible format. Unfortunately, now that we are working virtually, we haven't been as tight a ship as we have been in the past. And we always apologize if somebody comes in unprepared for the audience they're speaking to. But we try our best. We're not perfect.
Well, what I'm talking about is not necessarily having a document prepared in Braille or anything of that. So that's not even what I was talking about. I'm just talking about simply telling the presenter, okay, you have a slide, you have a presentation, please be descriptive when you speak. I don't think that, I mean, that's something that can be done instantaneously. That's not something that they have to prepare ahead of time or you have to know ahead of time.
And it's something that we attempt to do. We are not perfect human beings, and there will be times when we don't get to do it. In the last presentation, we did stop off and ask for them to do that.
The only people that asked for the presentation to be described was yours truly, Mr. Blake, and Anu. The chairman of the committee is supposed to be making that request, and it was done twice. Even when they did it, the presenter still didn't do it, or did it in a very limited fashion.
Well, Mr. Torres, I will repeat, we are not perfect. We can only try our best. Okay, I think
that's an unacceptable response, sir, and I'll leave it there. Good night, everybody.
Accept it or not accept it, that's the world. Let us move on to our bus rail subcommittee report. Tino?
Yes, the minutes, the draft minutes include reference to when Tatiana came in February and she talked about the stations that are being worked on. This year, 6 stations will be rebuilt and the remaining 5 will be completed next year. We discussed things about lift grab bars, around benches, and I think, Phil, it was you who asked for the grab bars. And Tatiana mentioned that they're at a very advanced stage. So I don't know if that means it's too late to deal with grab bars. Maybe we can hear some response from staff next week. We also talked about, Debbie Fisher asked if staff is trained with respect to persons who have autism or psychiatric conditions. And Carol mentioned that she would look into it. We talked about occupancy predictions and the system used at the moment relies on the prior week's data of how crowded a subway train or a bus was, and they announced that on the day that people are boarding. We also talked about, the proposed PIDS's Chief Asante came, and the last thing. One of the important things that Doris Ray mentioned was that the development of better color combinations. She mentioned that, red on black or green on black regarding the size of the train showing. These are not easily viewed by people with low vision. So those were some of the things, and you all have a copy of the draft that Anu prepared. Please look it over because we'll review and approve it at next Monday's meeting.
Tito, thank you. Paul, you're on, and you're actually rushed this week.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so for the Metro Access Subcommittee, we discussed at the last month's meeting the Metro Access van updates in terms of things, in terms of its the cams and things like that. And we distinguished that older vehicles do not have the signage on it and the process of how that's going to look. And also the next generation vans, there was some discussion about it. And in light of tonight's discussion agenda, I already resubmitted my amended agenda to continue that discussion on the technical requirements based on what went out from WMATA. So if you do have questions, please bring those to the next subcommittee meeting. We'll be having a discussion about that. Also, we discussed at the last meeting about the web booking site update and how that project is going with the changing of the passwords. I do have other further questions, but again, there'll be time to discuss that at the next meeting. We also discussed the Metro Access scheduling and software update. And again, there's supposed to be an RF, RFP or RFI going out for that at some point soon. And from the update from the directors that this whole type of project, because it's looking at different facets of the service, is going to take about 3 years to complete, which will include finally a GPS type of or a tracking system of the vehicle on the customer service end, which I've been strongly advocating for since I already see it. You know, as part of another current paratransit, which I use in New York City, and hopefully it'll be something near what I currently use in that city. We talked about also, and Denise also catch up with me. Oh, we talked about the GPS system, and there's been a bid out there to secure, a much better GPS system for the service. And I'm sure we're going to get an update on that. And we talked about the drive cam. Mr. Rush, if you're here on the call, is there anything else that I missed? I know we're also going to discuss next month. I incorporated into amending the agenda that was sent out to everybody a little while ago during this meeting. Discussion on if they have any further questions on that, OIG report that was discussed previously. Ms. Rush, are you here today? Did you have any other things to add to this summary discussion?
I didn't hear the hearings. That's all I have a question about. Is there a for the hearings?
Yeah, and then would you go over the information on submitting written comments, verbal comments, and attendance at the hearings?
Sure. So as you know, that the online survey has been open, and it's going to continue until 5 p.m. on Tuesday, March 16th. And call and wait in queue for their turn to give their live comments, or they can leave a message by calling a different number. These numbers are on the website, but I can share that if you'd like. That there is a toll-free number. It's 844-468-5748. This number is an alternate way to provide responses for the budget survey that's available online. The online budget survey allows free form budget comments in addition to responses to questions. We're allowing them on the phone version of the survey as well.
Also, oh, sorry.
Yes.
You finished? Oh, so the other two pieces that we discussed, I glanced through the minutes, was the fact that we talked about the calculations of Metro Access fares, and we will be having a deeper dive and discussion at the next subcommittee meeting. And then there was questions about the ongoing eligibility process because of the pandemic, and specifically if your current Metro Access service is going to expire soon, it still will be extended in 60-day stints. So you do not need to worry about that. It will be automatically extended until the eligibility office is fully functioning and open to do assessments again.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Patrick,
did you yes. I have a question. I don't know if we're done with reports. Thank you. No, I don't have a question for Paul. I wanted to make a comment if I could.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Phil, I need to take issue with something that Ansel said regarding the way the presentations have been made and the fact that notification to describe the slides are not good for blind people. Perhaps they're not good for Ansel, but I'm not having any problem as a blind person following what they're given. So I think that the accusations aren't accurate. I'm not having a problem. I think they're doing a good job. I also think that if Anu says, hey, describe your slides, Mr. Blake says, describe your slides for our presentation, I think that's good.
And what did I forget? I'll forget.
Now, Anu, maybe one thing that we could say, the way you make your introductions in the beginning, to say that to remind at the beginning of a meeting that when presenting, please be as descriptive as possible, because you have blind people in the audience. The same way as we say, when we are speaking, please give our names so that those that are hearing impaired will know who's speaking. And so perhaps that can be an instruction at the beginning of the meeting and should cover that. How well people do, that sometimes depends on the presenter. And you're, as you said, Phil, that's not always easily understood, or easily done by some presenters. Some are better than others. But I just wanted to put that out there. And then I need to talk to Mr. Blake at some point, and I'd love to catch up with David at some point. So,
thank you, Tino. I see your hand up.
Yes, a different point altogether. Having finally gotten my first vaccination Friday. I'm pleased about that. But on the other hand, I've done a lot of homework about pathogens. And, you know, people have been talking about the current pandemic being caused by a one in 100 years virus. Well, that's no longer going to be the case. Dr. Fauci himself has said that it's likely that there will be more before 100 years is up. In addition, there, having just gotten my first vaccination and getting the second one in a month, there are questions as to how long the immunity will last from the vaccinations. Beyond that, there are questions related to the variants that are big in Great Britain and South Africa and elsewhere. And the variants are here now, and there will be variants based on pathogens that crop up in the U.S. itself. So I'd like to feel that we're able to see light at the end of the tunnel. I don't expect, though, that I'll be going out anytime soon. It won't be safe. We don't know even if people have gotten both shots, they can still carry the virus and they can still shed it and infect you. So I hate to throw cold water on it. We should do the things that Phyllis talked about. We have work groups working on a variety of things that we could institute after we feel safe. But I just warned everyone that whether you've gotten your one or two vaccinations already, this is not for the long term yet.
Thank you, Tino. I see Vanessa has her hand up and Darnice has her hand up, and we have 3 minutes left. So Vanessa, if you can take a minute and a half, and then we'll give Darnice a minute and a half before we end.
Okay, thank you. So I have a consumer now that has contacted me about her recertification. She's in her mid-80s, and she's concerned because when I three-wayed with her and talked to eligibility, the woman told us that she had to, there's two parts to it. They were going to send her the application. She had to take that part, one part to her doctor, one part she had to fill out. And what Mr. Paul just said, I thought they didn't have to do all of that.
That's for recertification. But what we're doing right now is extending one's eligibility. So yes, if she eventually wants to be recertified, she will have to submit an application. But in the meantime, until the office is open, as Paul stated, her eligibility will continue to be extended.
If they're a newly person to be newly eligible for Metro Access, that's a whole different story.
No, but in the new people, the new people though are getting presumptive eligibility. But they do need the application. Yes, new people need the application. Current customers, like the person Ms. Coles is describing, her eligibility is being extended until we're able to bring her in for a functional assessment and a review of her application, probably months from now, as Tino just pointed out.
Well, thank you. And Ms. Blake, if I can ask you to just email a copy of that statement to Vanessa, so Vanessa can read it to her friend, because this is the third time she's brought this issue up at various meetings. So I think she needs a script to read to her friend.
No problem.
Super, thank you.
Thank you.
What's up?
This is Darnice. Is that it, Vanessa? Or are you finished?
Yes, I am.
My question was, I became aware that when you register on site, you have to update all your information by the end of March. Is that true?
Are you talking about the web booking?
Yes.
Okay. Where's Mr. Mr. Schaefer? Can you take a crack at that question? This is up your alley.
David, you're muted.
Okay, I'm sorry I missed the question.
This was about those who are with the web booking registering on the site with the password. Ms. Darnese Bush had a question about it. Can you repeat it, Ms. Darnese?
The question is that it's supposed to be updated. So is it undergoing process or something that people should be aware of?
I haven't heard that. Don't know if Tarian has any information on that.
Because there's some indication on it that you have to update or change items by March the 30th.
Oh yeah, that's the notice telling you that you need to update your password by March 15th, or you're gonna, have to get a new password. So
if you don't update your password, will you keep the same password that you've always had?
Not if it doesn't meet the qualifications in the security. So we put in some medium level of security, which requires letters and numbers and recommends a special character of certain length. So as to give you more security in your experience, since the default password for most people was their birth date, which is easily obtainable.
Okay, so is this information about the updating the web booking on the website, on the WMATA website, under Metro Access?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay.
And we are now 1 minute over, so I apologize to the interpreters, as I do every week. and thank you so much. And the meeting has come to an end. See you guys on next Monday for Bus Rail. Thank you. Really good meeting. And remember where all your assignments are.
Have a good week.
And Darnese, this is an agenda topic of the subcommittee, so you can bring that up next month, okay?
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Bye. Well, you meant next meeting, not next month.
Oh, yeah, this month. I'm sorry. Later this month.
Okay.
So appreciate everybody.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.